Welcome. I'm Jessica Teigen, and this is the Evolving to Exceptional podcast, where we talk about reaching peak performance in our workplaces, homes, and communities so that we can live our best life possible, an exceptional life. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Evolving to Exceptional podcast. We have another fantastic guest with us, Melissa Martorano. She is the Senior HR Leader, Director of Talent Management at Christie Industrial Holdings. She is doing fantastic things there with learning and development and helping managers develop the skills that they need. Melissa, before we get into talking about all the awesome things that you're doing and the things that really are important to you right now, I want to give you a chance to just introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about who you are and why it is you do what you do.
Sure. No, thanks for the intro and for having me on. So I'm originally from Dallas, Texas girl, living in St. Louis now. So a transplant. And interestingly, I started out my career actually as a teacher. So made a pivot into the HR world. Have mostly been in the recruiting and talent side of things. But I think having those roots of teaching as well as following my mom's footsteps, I think, with her being an L&D, the natural piece for me to go into as I continue to grow was the professional development side and the growth and helping my employees grow. So yes, if I'm going to be doing learning and development, and it's a new thing for Christine, we've never really had a formal HR team here. So I think it's great that I had the opportunity to come in and get some structure and put or build out the structure and foundational blocks for the recruiting aspect and the learning.
It's so interesting because I know your organization is a mid-sized organization. How many people or employees does Christie have?
Roughly about 140, 115 between the business units.
So it's that interesting size where I always think of it when it comes to HR talent management, there's this like shift that happens between about 100 and 200 employees. And it can be really difficult there because you don't have as many HR talent management resources in the organization yet because you're not big enough for it, but you're growing and you have all the needs. And so regardless of how many employees you have, you still have the needs or the functions that have to be performed. So tell me a little bit about what some of the challenges have been since you started at Christie Industrial Holdings and as you've been working there to put some of this stuff in place. What have you seen as some of the biggest challenges or are things you've been focused on over the last year?
And it's been a little bit less than a year. I've been here, it's been almost 8 months now. Started in December of 22. And the role was really created to focus mostly on the recruiting aspect. They had a lot of recruiting needs at the time. And yes, the learning piece of it was attached to the talent management, the succession planning, all that comes with that. But my boss reported for CEO, and after a couple of months, he said, I really didn't realize. I think the thing that you would be making an impact in was the recruiting, but it seems like the development is really what people are seeking you out for. I was like, well, yeah, because everybody wants to grow. And I think after the pandemic, people kind of reassessed values, and their priorities have changed and shifted some too, but also we were all kind of holding back. I know like myself was. It was a survival mode, right, at times. And so thinking long term or thinking about the development and that progress wasn't a thing. So that's been an interesting shift. So I came in, we knocked out a number of the racks we had open. And great. I do have a couple of sales ones that are critical that I need to work on. So shameless plug there. If anybody has any great sales people that are in Houston or in St. Louis or the Midwest, if they have refactory or catalytic experience, please send them away. But yeah, I think it's anybody from our hourly production people that work in our plants, and they've been looking to the Southern office, and I've helped fill out FAFSA paperwork. We've gotten one of them actually enrolled and taking some English classes. And that was really exciting. I had somebody helping me translate, but asking him how many years of formal education he had actually had. So I could assess, okay, this is why you can't even read this in Spanish, because you had 1 year of formal education in Mexico prior to coming to the States. So that part has been a huge success. You can think of it as confidence when they are getting, when they're building that knowledge base and continuing to grow with that growth mindset. So those are some of the big ones, I think, that, yeah, what I'm really here for.
So it's super interesting because I think your experience is fairly consistent across, first of all, my own experience, as well as some of the other companies I've talked to, in that as companies are growing and they're bringing in an HR leader, like the number one focus is usually recruitment. It's always, right. I got positions to fill. How am I going to fill these positions? And how do I fill them with good people so I don't have to do it again and again, and all those things. And then what you discover is that the biggest return in terms of the effort really ends up being in the learning and development space. But what's interesting, and I recently read a really powerful book around exceptional leadership, and it talked about that, how often we focus on the learning side of learning and development and not necessarily the development side of learning and development. And so as you were talking about the pandemic and you were talking about the experience that we had there, I think you're right. We were in the survival state for sure. There was lots of stresses, lots of things going on. And so that excess capacity to maybe do learning and development wasn't there. I'm curious of your thoughts on, as you've been bringing this learning and development in, how you maybe consider addressing both the learning side and the development side. How are you approaching that? Yeah. And what are some of the things that you're doing to help promote the learning and development of your people?
Sure. So I think we've talked about this too. Like, if somebody's not in the mental space to accept the new knowledge, it's not going to be retained. If it's for adult learning, it needs to be applicable, right? It needs to be some sort of an immediate value, because we have way too many other things going on. So it's not going to help me like right now, or in the very near future. It's really hard for me to process as an adult. And I think that can be said about the vast majority of adults. But so for a great example right now, we're doing something with like Fun to Boss training. I'm getting from AIM. So I have four individuals that are hourly people that have been recently promoted. And they've never had any formal supervisor or manager training. And so they're going through it, broken out. It's like a self-paced course that I got through AIM. They each have their own login. They go through and do a few modules each week, but we broke it out over the course of a month. And then we touch base every Friday afternoon for a month. So I get them for 30 minutes and we go through and I'm like, okay, what did you take away from that? And I'm doing it as well. I'm just, especially with this first round, and we'll have another session and do it with them too. But it's the implementing change, right? Or different ways to have conversations, whether that's a critical conversation or just how to communicate, hey, I'm no longer your peer. I am now your boss, and I have to track your time and attendance. And if you're late, I have to write you up. And whereas like a couple weeks before this, they were maybe having a beer together to work. That shift and breaking it down and making it applicable when we meet. And I give them some silly scenarios to compare it to. I'm like, oh, that one really stuck out to me because I do that with my daughter, Brooklyn, right? And it's a similar comparison. You can compare it, just make it more real.
I love that you're using that. One of my, as we talk about capacity, especially, one of my favorite examples to use is if you think about, because kids are really great, like obvious examples for us as adults. So if you think about a kid who's, it's the end of the day, they've been playing all day, haven't slept, they're hungry, they're tired, they're worn out, and you sit down with them at the table and you say, hey, let's work on learning our numbers. Right. How well is that going to go?
Right. Yeah, just go do something new.
Right.
It's not going to work. It's not going to work because they're hungry, because they're tired, because they're not in the, they don't have the mental capacity or the physical capacity to take in that information. And we recognize that in children.
Right.
But we don't always recognize that in adults. And I think that is an important lesson for us to realize, is that if people are at capacity, and when at capacity, I don't just mean they're hungry, they're tired like a child, although those could be relevant too. But I think also in terms of their level of stress. So if people are, if we go back to the pandemic, if one of the reasons we probably couldn't do a lot of learning and development during the pandemic was we were at capacity. We're stressed. We have a lot going on. We're trying to navigate kids at home. We're trying to navigate working remotely, all these new things that we haven't experienced before. And so there wasn't this excess capacity to be able to learn more. And I don't know if you've experienced this, but one of my theories, and I wrote an article or posted an article earlier this week about this topic, is that people are at capacity. They're still at capacity from the pandemic. And because of all that stress, because of all those experiences, there's not space to necessarily take in a whole lot more. So even when we're doing learning or training and we're giving it to people, they don't have the capacity to internalize it. Have you experienced that at all? What are your thoughts on that?
Yes. One of the guys last week, I asked him a question and he said, I'm sorry, what did you just say? And I go, are you already thinking about what you have to get done? Because I know there was an order that was missed downstairs and you have to get up there and it's a Friday afternoon. I was like, okay. So I repeated the question and it's not a formal thing. I'm not documenting what we're doing, right? It's a conversation. So it's a little bit more natural because I don't want it to be add extra stress to it. To your point, we have enough on our plate. So I think if I can remove any of those barriers that I try to, right? So I got them at the end of the day on a Friday. Things should be wrapped up for the most part. And with those roles, those people that I'm working with, it's the first week we miss, right? Some of them haven't finished training. They didn't have to figure out how to log in until later in the week. And we're talking about guys that are not in front of a computer. So that's another piece that so checking in with their leaders to say, hey, how's it going? But with them, and are they talking about this training? Are you talking about it too? But even before they were selected to do it, I had conversations with their leadership to say, hey, how is that person doing? What's the situation at all? Is everything good there that you know of? Is it to where are they ready to take on some of that? I think that's the big piece because out of the ones, I had three that I looked at to send to the adult learning for English classes. Only one of them did it. And I think I know why the other two didn't, because of things that were going on. There was just too much at home, too many other responsibilities. It takes away from their evenings. And so I appreciate and value the fact that they were like, we're not going to waste the time of doing that.
Right.
Great. Okay. We'll revisit this in a few months if it's something that you want to do. So I think just being direct about it, I have noticed it with some, but I'm trying as far as I can to overcome and reach those people on a different level to get to that root cause.
And I think you raise an interesting point, too, as you talk about being in front of a computer and people who maybe aren't normally, but also for people that are in front of a computer. I think Microsoft released a report not too long ago talking about the massive increase in time we're spending on Teams meetings or on virtual meetings. And I know for me, like sitting up, I can sit on my computer. I have my meetings. We record our podcasts. I do my things. But the last thing I really want to do is keep sitting in front of my computer to do training. And so but I love trainings and I love learning. And so some of the best ones that I've discovered are ones that have those phone apps, right? Where I can pull it up or up on my app or my iPad or whatever. And I can do it while I'm working out, or I can do it while I'm putting on my makeup, or I can do it while I'm getting ready for bed or whatever the things are. So I can fit it into my life. Versus trying to make time for it and carve out time from a day that already feels maybe all the way full or all the way filled in. And the other thing is that if a person is at capacity, I think then we have to ask the question, how do we help them expand their capacity? How do we equip them to be able to navigate that so there is room for learning and development in their day or in their life, you know, in general. And I think that is something that at least historically organizations have been pretty challenged with, that I think it's awesome that you're carving out time in the day so that it's not like they have to do extra. It's not something they have to add on to what they've already got, because that can be the tipping point in terms of being able to actually do it effectively where it does develop that.
Retain it, right? And I think I chose or we pulled people from different business units that don't work together. There's two of our business units right now. So from a cross-functional standpoint and learning about the other, this is a new peer group for them. And I'm trying to introduce it like that too. So an extra way of like connection. So it's not just, hey, we're going to teach you how to do this and you need to do it right away. It's a, okay, how can we or help, how can we set the stage to have it more almost organically happen, right? Where you network internally, even though you're in the still an hourly type environment in production, because they're not on the Teams calls all the time, right? They're not constantly presenting. We recently had a Foundations of Leadership training that we hosted, like a 2-day summit. And it was a deep dive as to how the business actually makes money. And then also some soft skills. We did some basic recruiting and interviewing, 101, legal compliance. Like, when do you call our compliance director? Some of those things. But then it also talked about the history of Christy. And it was really great because out of the 12 individuals that we had, half of them actually had come originally from production roles and have been promoted into management. They were newly promoted or new to Christy kind of managers. And that was great. And then as a continuance from that, we're meeting once a month, that group. And they're presenting and made them pick a topic within a week. I gave them a list of different soft skills, basically anything from like imposter syndrome to critical conversations. And they each are going to do one once a month. And so I'll start the meeting and then we go through it. So my Fridays are now touching base with this other group for Bud the Boss training and then our larger group. And if they, for some reason, can't make that training or they are supposed to present, they have to work out in charge with their group and find someone else. And it's great because they're across all our business units too.
So I'm curious as to your experience with whether people are really embracing and wanting those opportunities or whether there is a lot of resistance too because they're busy and they're overwhelmed or the feelings and what, and maybe it's different for managers and leaders than it is for individual employees, but what has your experience been with people's wanting learning and development or wanting to expand their capacity and figure out how to or learn and develop more versus maybe resistance to taking on more learning and development opportunities?
If you're resistant to it, you're just resisting the change, right? Which we all have our moments of. So yes, they definitely have a few of those at times. And it's taken a one-on-one conversation. And fortunately, for me, I'm very fortunate because I work in the office most days. My previous job, I was hired remotely and the company was based with an office in the St. Louis Metroplex, but also it was based primarily out of Montreal. So it was a little harder and it was, you know, we were leaving that company, right, virtually. But being able to come in and build those relationships one with people, at least in our St. Louis facility, has been helpful because they know that I'm coming from a good place. And if I can get to know them a little bit more and on a personal level or like on an individual and learn their past, then it's okay. Hey, could you help me? Can you help me explain this to me? And then I can start to try and explain why they may want to continue to grow. Like some bricklayers that work for us and some apprentices. And typically they would never come into our office. They're out on job sites and that's good because they're busy, right? They're working and they're making money as a company and I appreciate that. But how am I going to get them to be at that superintendent level in the next 10 years? And to understand how to look at even a budget and have a conversation with office personnel, right? With the controller. So working on some of those soft skills and getting the buy-in from even some of their leadership has been an interesting task, but I finally feel like I'm getting there. It's just slowly introducing it. And if somebody's totally against it, I can't force someone to go and take a training.
You know, what's interesting is technically you could, right? You could force someone to sit through a training. Yeah. Cool.
Let's do 40 hours of continuing ed, everyone across the board.
What's interesting is you can force the learning side, like you can force the training side of the learning and development, but you can't force the actual development, the actual change in terms of performance, increase in skills, capability, capacity, ability to do more. And I think that a lot of learning and development programs really do just focus on the training or the learning side of it versus the integration side. And the piece that I think is often missing, and this is more from the neuroscience perspective, is the integration of the learning into the person's existing learning, their existing view of the world, how they see the world, and how then that learning applies to them or what they're going to do differently. Almost all training programs are built with actions and these steps and things like that. But if those don't fit with what's going to work for that unique individual, then they'll never actually apply it. They'll never actually develop that skill set. And in my career, one of the things that frustrated me so much was how I would train, give people all the tools, like we would cover it over and over. Some of the most basic things, right? Like giving effective feedback. Like you have to give feedback, or you have to set clear expectations with the people that are working for you as a manager. And consistently, there were some people who they knew what to do, they knew how to do it, they knew why they needed to do it, and then they still wouldn't do it. Have you experienced that?
Oh, yes. And it's funny because I had a coach, I played basketball in college, and I had a coach that said, the day that I stop yelling at you and coaching you is the day that I don't care. And it's funny because I really can understand that even more so, because if I'm not pushing them, I'm taking a step back, and it's because of frustration, right? And I need to reassess, and I'm going to go focus on some other individual stuff. And then I'll come back. I'm not going to just totally leave them, but that's a real thing, I think. Being able to connect it to their real life and make it relatable is one of the pieces that we go over in those weekly or monthly sessions. It's like, any of these things come up that you're like, hey, I could have used that with my spouse or my parents or my kid, my sibling or friend, right? Like, it isn't, the communication piece is across the board. It's not just at work and it's not just at home. So if you can learn any of those skills, I take a lot of it. And that probably would have helped me in my first marriage, but I wish I would have known that. And I laugh and I say it. And then like, it smiles up and we're like, oh, okay. She's not just trying to drill something into us. It is trying to make it relatable, but if they are resistant, it's not the easiest. It's, you can keep going, but I have too many other things to do too. So I'm not going to just, I don't want to just spend time focusing on, I need to figure out why they're not taking it. And everybody has a different learning set. So another piece of it is before the foundations training, I had them all take a learning set assessment. And it was, for adult learning, it was a silly one. It was like, okay, if you get a new TV or you get a new piece of tools or something, are you reading the instructions or are you just trying to figure it out? And so you go over your three basics. But even to when you meet somebody, what do you recognize first? Do you recognize like what they look like or the way that they sound or where you guys are at? And if you're memorizing a phone number, are you writing it down? So different ways of learning and memorizing things. And so that part has been helpful too. I use some of those things before I meet with people because I want to be able to make it authentic and good for that person, right? Individualized as much as I can.
And I think that is one of the best things you can do, is where people get really specific with what their learning is applying to them. And I love that you made the point about skill sets applying to our whole lives versus just at work. And one of the things we do in our training programs is we apply all of the skills to both work and family, so that as you're learning the skill, you get strategies for how to, of course, setting expectations is important at work. But you know what? Setting expectations at home, like honestly, 10 times even more important. You want to have less conflict at home, get really clear on who's doing what and what those expectations are. You'll eliminate a lot of fights, right? Like a lot of conflict if you do those things. Or if you can get really effective at giving conscious feedback instead of being reactive or reactionary. And so when I think one of the benefits can be when people can see how the skills they're learning are really going to help them and help them to be able to get through the things they're already doing more quickly, more effectively, that this is going to make a difference versus this is just one more thing for me to know or me to learn. But that requires them to recognize that there's something within them that has to be shifted or changed or evolved or grown in order to get that benefit. And oftentimes I think people think of learning and development as like another layer rather than as a shift of who they already are or a shift of how they're already existing. Right. It's not just more information.
No, it's like an integration. That's, I feel like it's one of those things. We do something called 2 second lean here. So and it's a part of our culture. It's in our values and on the Prissy Way on our wheel. If you look at that, and it is something that we post about, we talk about. There's like KPIs around it as an organization and as our teams. But it's the mindset of, hey, ask the question of why are we doing that? Could I do it? And so that growth mindset of just improving, I think, is a big piece of our culture here, which has helped to set the stage for, hey, we have a training person here, right? There's a talent management person now on site or within Prissy that you guys can utilize. So it's anything from being able to connect with them on a one-on-one level to get to that and overcome those challenges, but to also just being in a great environment where it's supported, right? And adopted already, because that's not always an easy thing, right? But there's certain places I know I've worked that if I ask questions, you could send a wrist. Right. Those things.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Do not ask that because you're going to make someone else look stupid and they're going to be annoyed. We all have those PTSD moments of other employers, but I'm fortunate and lucky with where I
am. And I think you bring up a really important point in the experiences people have had in the past and how it's shaped them. And so from the neuroperformance or the neuroscience side, when all of our lives, all the experiences that we have are shaping our neural pathways, they're shaping how we exist and show up and do things in the world. And so one of the things that I've discovered, especially around, as I talked about earlier, though, how come I've trained these managers on these things and they won't do it? And I've trained them on the behaviors. I've told them exactly what they need to do. When people don't do the thing that they know how and what they should do, if they have the information on it, that's the first step, right? You've got to know what it is and how to do it. But if they know that and they're still not doing it, then there's probably a neural pathway that is preventing them from doing it. There's probably a block. And all those experiences you talk about of being in workplaces where it's not open, being in places where it's not safe, or even things going back to childhood beliefs. I had a leader that I coached once that really senior leader had been a CEO for over 30 years. And he was awful at giving feedback, like at addressing poor performance of the people that worked directly for him. He had this tendency to just let it go on forever. And as we dove into why that was, we figured out that there was a deep-rooted fear that if he pushed too hard on their performance, they would leave and it would hurt the company. That it would hurt his ability to make money and support the people in the company. And so he didn't want to take that risk. And when it comes to neuroscience, we know that, and I talk about this in other episodes, but that we have neurons, not just in our head brain, but we have neural networks in our heart. And our gut brain is actually the one that's responsible for both taking action, self-preservation, and our identity. So if we have an identity or a self-preservation issue, something like, I'm afraid that if I give this person feedback, they might leave and then I'll have to do more work. Or if I upset this person, then they won't stick around. If there's a self-preservation or an identity issue, then they're not going to take action.
Right.
And that for me was like a huge eye-opener in terms of managers that I'd worked with before. And I actually sometimes wish I could go back in time, work with them again to see if we were able to dive into those root issues, those root blocks that were preventing them from taking action, if they could overcome them. And I know from working with the clients that we have that it's possible to do. I know that it's possible to change those neural pathways because we have neuroplasticity, but often we just don't know how to do it. And so then we end up stuck and we don't actually develop the skills that we need that will improve our lives.
So when I've met with managers like that, individuals, asking the whys and asking and getting it to be, there's not a heightened emotion around, right? Like you can start to tell when someone is starting to, okay, there's some walls or they're nonverbals, right? Like something is changing their demeanor, so that you may have struck a nerve there and maybe on something. But it's also, I can do it in other ways, right? You can influence that in different ways. But, oh, let me just send this article. Hey, I just thought that this was really cool. Thought that maybe you or someone on your team might be able to relate. And then let them read it and internalize it in the process, right? And then it's, hey, I think you said something recently and that kind of made sense. Oh, really? Yeah, tell me something I didn't know.
Yeah, exactly.
That thing, right? Like, but I think it's taking some of my own emotions out of it, which is not always easy, right? But HR, you have to do that, right? You have to remove emotions at times. You can't sit there and cry if you're transitioning and terminating. So just put the business. And you can't take it personally either, right? If somebody doesn't want to work with you or doesn't want to work for your company, like that's, I know early on in my career, if somebody didn't accept the job offer, I took it personally. I was like, what? Like, I thought that we had a good fit here. It's the influencing change, I think, even in different ways that has been helpful and beneficial to me as I've continued to grow and progress through my career.
And I think you bring up a good point when you talk about emotions and seeing those emotions or experiencing those emotions. We've often, despite all the rhetoric and all the research around how important emotional intelligence is, still there's this desire to not have to deal with emotions in the workplace.
Right.
To not have to bring your whole self to work, to not have to leave that at home. Don't be too emotional, all the things, right? And in our society, especially here in the US, our culture is super head focused, right? Thinking, understanding, making sense of, and being analytical and rational. And emotions are not rational. Emotions are by their nature, their energy that's in motion in our body, their energy that exists there. And you're right in that they're certainly always an indicator of something. They're always an indicator when they show up. And I think your point about HR professionals is also important in that if we don't deal with those emotions, if we don't ever learn how to manage and express them. So it doesn't mean that, like you said, I've done lots of terminations. That's not a good place to be crying your eyes out. However, that's a very traumatic and emotional experience.
Right.
And so if you don't learn how to effectively express and process those emotions or move through those emotions, they'll get stored in our bodies.
Right.
And so a lot of times when we find these blocks for people, when there's something that's standing in the way of them developing the skill that we want them to develop, it's because there's emotion that's still stored in the body that they haven't worked through. Could have been there for a really long time, could just be there recently. But there's something there that's preventing that movement. And we've actually got to get comfortable with being willing to allow or observe or understand the emotions that people are experiencing if we're going to help them move through and actually grow and develop.
No, I couldn't agree with that more. And I think that's my first marriage was with somebody that was law enforcement. And so going through therapy and being proactive with even like our daughter, they sent me her to play therapy and then navigating a lot of those big feelings that come with having someone that's a first responder as a parent who misses things, who doesn't make all the dance recitals, doesn't make the games, doesn't make the practices, doesn't get to coach because they're called to serve in a different way and at work. And I think there's been times that my daughter's been seeing that aspect, and I've very similar actually. Your local in St. Louis is their leadership institute has done, I think that's what they're called now, but they put on a really interesting training for first responders a few years ago. And I went with my ex and some others that he knew, and it was interesting to go through and talk about where you're storing, right? Because it does have to go somewhere. So it's the home life, right? You have medical things that go on, right? Telling you that I randomly found out that I had thyroid cancer last year and had a great stuff. Thank God it's done. And it was like it never been. But even those emotions of like, I have cancer? Like what? Like I'm the healthy one, like of her parents. Like this is so, but going through and talking with somebody about them and processing that, I think is critical to survival, right? If not, you're not feeling things, you're not going through things fully, you're not fully living. is how I feel. Helping people, like we have somebody here at work that's actually a benefits advocate. That is the title. And it's a new role for us. We created it a couple years ago, but it's a benefits specialist, but he's an advocate. And that is the best thing that we could ever offer, I think, to employees. He had worked with large ISDs for a little while too. So it's a very genuine position for him, I think, to where he can connect with individuals and their families, help them go over like an EOB that gets sent to their house. And why is this so complicated to understand, right? Like our insurance in general, and all the billings, it's crazy and complicated. But he's there to help walk through it. A very robust EAP. We offer 8 counseling sessions to also 8 coaching sessions yearly. So there's some bad stigmatism around EAP. But
yeah. So do people take advantage of that in your organization?
We have seen more. Yes. There's been an increase, but it's getting the stories of certain people and those change kids, right? Like the people that can be the spokesperson that everybody knows. That's, you get those internal cheerleaders, if you will, or poster child or whatever it is you're trying to promote. And that has been helpful and more meaningful because, oh, if that person's doing that, then hey, maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting because we had that experience too, where most organizations have an employee assistance program. Most organizations offer some number of either counseling or coaching or therapy type sessions, amongst other things that the employee assistance programs usually offer. But the usage rates are incredibly low, which is why employee assistance programs can be paid for so easily. Like why there really aren't crazy high costs, because the utilization rate is so low. And I was one of those people during the pandemic who sought out, the pandemic was hard for me I had my twin 9-month-olds. I had my 3-year-old. I was trying to work. It was a tough year. And so I made use of the AAP and started talking with a therapist at the time to work through and just to get that support. And it was so powerful. And I ended up posting internally, and I was a senior executive vice president at the time, to just share openly, like, I've used the EAP and you should too. Like, there's no reason not to. And what's interesting is I think there's this resistance to therapy in general or to support in general. And yet that's really what we're talking about when we talk about moving through emotions or moving through blocks or challenges.
It's often a change that you have to do, right? It's like CBT. It's cognitive behavior therapy. And if I wouldn't have done it, I probably wouldn't have seen that aspect within the L&D space, right? And to your point, like, the more you use it in your common, like, vocabulary, right? It's anytime that we're talking about EAP and I bring it up and try and get a plug in somewhere with our senior leadership, it's, hey, have you guys called it? Have you walked through it to actually know what it looks like? Because if you can say that you have, then you can genuinely say, oh yeah, call it. It's not scary. Even if you don't need it, quote unquote, right now, all right, you can still benefit from at least understanding how the process works. So you do know somebody that needs it. Because I've had somebody standing in the middle of this last week, and he was like, I wish I was more comfortable having the conversation, because it would have probably helped this individual who's no longer working with them, because they were not coping well. And with some other things that were happening outside of work, but unfortunately, they were ended up getting terminated and ended up in a, it's one of those things that, so I know you genuinely care about your team, right? But if you can't have that conversation, practice it with me. Practice bringing it up, right? If you know somebody that's in recovery, from addiction of some sort, hey, did you mind if I asked, did you go to meetings? What is that? How did you get to that step and make it a normal thing to where we're not just sweeping down the rug, right? And that's something that I've had to do growing up. I have amazing care. I am very fortunate, and my parents are still together. There's days that, yes, they probably question, we've all questioned, like, why people are still together at times. But amazing humans. And my dad grew up in a very different situation. He left home at 16. He ended up never graduating high school. And it's something that he probably still to this day regrets doing and not even getting his GED. But he did end up owning his own business and has been successful in a number of different ways. So it's not always this quantifiable education formally that you have to be successful. I think a huge impact was my mother, but he was a functioning alcoholic. And that's me saying this like out loud. And I think me going to my first Al-Anon meeting in college was a big piece of that, where it was like, okay, holy cow, I'm saying this out loud. And now I'm saying it on a podcast. Oh, wow. Okay. Ripping the Band-Aid off. And it's coming into the connection with who I really am. It is what it is.
And I think you hit on some really good points there, in that there's often this stigma around support, whether that's therapy, which is, can be incredibly valuable, or coaching, or different, there's different levels of support, that I have to really be a need. What does it mean to need it? And I think there's this stigma against, you don't need it. You're fine. I don't really need that. I'm good. I remember the first time I went to therapy, my mom saying to me, I was going through a huge transition and it was the pandemic and all the things, why do you need that? You're fine. You don't need that.
Right.
And I was like, well, just because you think that doesn't mean that that's true. In fact, in most cases, and I'll use therapy loosely because not everybody needs that level of support all of the time, arguably. However, some degree of support, we all have some degree of wounds, some degree of challenges, of things that are getting in the way of us living our best life. If those things weren't there, we wouldn't be struggling. We would be better leaders. Right. We would be better human beings. Right. We would be all of these things. And so I think part of it is overcoming that stigma that there has to be some like really serious need. You have to be in really dire straits before you get therapy or coaching. Like, that's not really true. You can get it before you have a problem. In fact, sometimes that's better.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you're also right in that there's often this, you talked about having a parent who's a functional alcoholic. I can relate to that. I have that too. And there can be this stigma that from the outside that everything looks good. You look like you're fine. You look like you have it all together. Everybody looks good. But the truth is, behind the scenes, everybody's got stuff. Mm-hmm. I have yet to meet somebody who, when I share my stuff, doesn't have their own stuff. Everybody's got it. And all that stuff, all those challenges, those wounds, those issues, those things are the things that are preventing our leaders from being their best leaders, are preventing our employees from showing up and performing at their best, are preventing us from enjoying our lives the way that we could. They're the things that are preventing us from having the results that we want to have in our lives. But the more we ignore them and the less we address them, the worse that it gets, the worse that it piles on.
It's suppressed with a little bit more mentalized, right? And that's something I got really good at, being married to somebody for so long that had to do that to stay sane in their career. I had to almost decompartmentalize things too, because if not, I was just a ball of tears all the time, because I just felt rejected, right? And didn't feel supported and didn't have a partner, is what it felt like half the time, maybe more than that. But anyway, needless to say, I think the stigmatism, especially in these male dominant like manufacturing industries that I'm in, the skilled trades, I have this incredible, amazing human as a partner, and he's great. And he's so mature and emotionally like intelligent and bold. But there are times that you can see his past traumas too, from his previous marriage. Like, I'm like, okay, babe, like what is that? Where is that coming from? And he'll want to almost talk on the phone. Like, no, if we're going to text a couple of these, because I want to be intentional with who we're handling it. And like, I don't want it to be this emotional and heightened. Then you hear the verbal and you feel all these emotions on the phone or in person. I want it to be like a calm, rational conversation. And then we can get through that, because then all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, I you're right. That is completely not what I meant by that. Or by understanding that, yes, to your point, even though it looks pretty and people don't see everything below the surface. So when you get to know people on that deeper level, it's yes, everybody has their stuff, even the ones that are great, right? Like it's how you communicate and if you're receptive to talking about those things.
And our leaders, our managers in our workplaces more than ever need to develop the skill set first for themselves to be able to look deeper, to address the things that are getting in their way, is to be willing to acknowledge the emotional impact. And when I say emotional, a lot of times people think of emotional as big, dramatic emotion, as crying or yelling or big emotion. But really, all emotion is at its root is energy in the body. Emotion is when your heart rate goes faster, when you start to sweat, when you feel your body tense or move in a certain way. We have this physiological response that's triggered by some sort of emotion that's coming up. When we label it, when we start to say, oh, I feel frustrated, or I feel, that's a feeling. And we can choose our feelings. We can choose how we feel about the emotion, but we can't choose the emotion. The emotion is going to come up. And that emotion doesn't have to be huge to get in our way or to cause us issues or problems. And you talked about suppressing, and certainly first responders have to suppress their emotions. What's important is that they don't repress them. So suppression is short term. I'm going to suppress this. I'm going to deal with it later because I need to be present in this situation to deal with what's in front of me. We have to do that. And if I don't later deal with that suppressed emotion, it becomes repressed. And over time, as we numb stuff, hold on to those emotions, that causes damage in our bodies. That causes damage, long-term health issues, heart conditions, autoimmune conditions. Right. And so when we look at the world today that's filled with growing health conditions and issues and challenges, we have to also consider the emotion that's being stored in there. We talked a lot about the personal side of that. And I think that's just as important because you and I both know there's only one life. We only live one life. Right. There's no work life, home life. Like it's just one life. You're one human being, whether you're at work or you're at home, you're the same human being, and you don't get to leave what you're experiencing at home. It's still in your body when you're at work.
Right.
And so if as workplaces, we can recognize that, you know what, if somebody's going through serious trauma at home, that's going to impact them at work. And if we ignore that, we are doing that person as well as everybody who's working with that person a disservice.
Right.
Versus understanding what that experience is and helping to support the person through that experience so that you can come out the other side and you can move through the challenges that you're having.
Yeah. No, agreed. Couldn't agree more.
So there's a lot of work, I think, to be done around how do we do this better development and not just look at it as psychotherapy, not just look at it as, oh, I only need that if it's trauma or if it's really bad or if I'm really in a bad place. And instead understand that there's these layers of us that if we deal with them and if we learn how to deal with them, especially as HR leaders, managers, if we can develop that those skills, that capacity, we can help people in ways that are much more significant than what we can do by just doing the basic HR practices.
It's funny because that's one of the first things that I did with coming to Christy, right? And it's in my DNA to want to help and leave everybody and every place better than it, right? My parents probably. It's totally my parents, but a lot of me too. And I joke that I'm the golden retriever for a company. And that is when I interviewed at Purina, I remember years ago, they asked me that question. If you were an animal, what would you be? And I'm the golden retriever. Very coachable, but very loyal and like upbeat and just happy, right? And want to be there to make sure everyone is doing better. And it's interesting because the first, I guess, the big thing that I did was that adult education and learning for one of my Hispanic people. And coming in and saying, who's asking? Who's telling us that we should do this? And I was like, oh, no, I just thought it would be nice if you'd want to go. I'll pay you to go. Even though it's after hours, we'll just switch your hours around so you can do that. And because do I have to? Am I in trouble at work? I was concerned because of performance. And I was like, oh, no, this has nothing to do with that. I just thought that I know you have a couple of wonderful kids you've talked about. And I know that they're at an age where they have friends and their parents are probably wanting to check and talk with you and be able to connect with you as well if their kids are having a play date. And if you can't communicate with them, like, that's probably hard. And he just looked at me and was like, thank you. Gracias. And this woman was like, no, of course. So it was one of those things that was really cool because he comes over and he's on the second or third semester because they're doing our quarters. And we've talked about what he's learning in class. And I'm doing some Spanish to practice and to show him, okay, keep going. And I sent some like Smarties. There are some cool pencils or something that have little sayings on them. But it's a genuine thing. And I think I had a senior vice president that I worked with in my last company. And he said it so well. And it just stuck with me. It was like, know and care about your numbers, right? Know your numbers, but care about people. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, great. Then you can go to sleep at night, right? And I can look at my daughter and I can be proud of where I'm working. And I can know that her coming here is going to be well received in a way, right? She gets dropped off here in the afternoon, sometimes after school by her grandmother. Great. And she'll come in and she'll ask questions. I work with all these engineers, so they love talking to her about our ceramic pieces and things like that, where the dirt that we have at our office. And I think that's the part. Like, I'm integrating, like, hey, here's who I am. I'm around and I'm the default parent by a lot. And I genuinely have the best of intentions for everything that I'm doing. It'll have alternative moments. It's coming from a good place. So if it's ever received differently, please let me know. But here's who I am and trying to just help.
And now you've made such a lifelong connection, both with you personally with that individual, but also with the organization to show how much you care and are willing to treat them as a human and help them in their whole life, in their whole existence, rather than just because of a work thing or just because it's going to help you at work. And I think that goes a long way to breeding commitment with and from employees. So this has been a great conversation. I think you and I could go on for a long time. I want to give you a chance to give our audience any final thoughts, any final words you want to share as we wrap up this episode.
I think it's be intentional with your own growth and setting a part of that time for your own self. I think as HR individuals, we're usually the ones that don't always practice, but we preach. And I think obviously you can contest that too or attest to that. But be willing to step outside of your comfort zone. And it's okay to not know something and to go after it and seek it and just keep doing the best you can.
I love that. And I think in the world today, change is coming at a rate we've never seen it come before. We're dealing with levels of stress and issues in our communities and in our workplaces that we've never experienced to the extent that we're seeing it today. And so now more than ever, personal development, growth, and not just learning and training, but true integrative development, true evolution is really critical to the development of your people, to overcoming the challenges that we're going to experience in the future. And so if you're an HR leader, if you are the leader in an organization, if you are a manager or an aspiring leader or manager, I encourage you, it is time now to start looking inward, to figuring out and addressing the inner challenges, the roadblocks, the hurdles, the things that are preventing you from doing the types of work that you know you need to do and from truly being an exceptional leader. And it is essential that you learn how to do that in an effective way if you're going to serve your people effectively moving forward into the future. So as we wrap up this episode, I want, as I do and as I end every episode, I just want to remind you to just always keep evolving, keep growing, keep looking for those opportunities to rewire your neural pathways, to expand how you live and exist in the world so that you can experience more exceptional experiences on your performance journey so that you can enjoy your life, so that you can enjoy the experiences that you're having, and you can create the results and the outcomes that you want for yourself. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and we will be back next week again with another episode.